Hello and welcome to Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. With Databook, we talk to healthcare leaders about technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll get started in just a moment. In this episode, we spoke with Greg Church, the president of ForMedica, a healthcare technology company that works to give organizations a more complete view of patient records. He talked about the company's work with hospitals, health systems, physicians, and laboratories to exchange data and high-quality data. He discussed the work towards interoperability, the exchange of healthcare information between systems, payers, and patients. He talked about how he'd like to see a nationwide patient ID. And he says consumers are going to be driving changes in healthcare because they want more access to their data. And we will take it away. So thanks very much. We're going to be talking today with Gregory Church, president of ForMedica. Gregory, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Ron, for the invitation.
Okay. Just wanted to ask just if you could tell us a little bit about your company. Just give us a little bit of an overview of ForMedica.
Sure. Well, we're excited. We're in our 24th year now. And ForMedica, the original vision when we started was to create more interoperability between physicians and their laboratories. Our original vision was to take away the paper and the hassle of ordering laboratory tests and getting test results back. We were one of the first vendors in the industry that developed a portal and used the internet to transmit the information. Fast forward, we still have a lot of business in the laboratory interoperability space. We work with commercial labs and various hospital-based labs that are part of academic facilities. And more recently, in the last few years, we really started focusing more on the data quality aspect of healthcare interoperability. As you're moving transactions and doing more with interoperability, you got to make that data much more reliable. So we do have a master person index platform as well. We work closely today with health information exchanges, health information networks. Of course, the laboratory industry is still a big focus for us. And we now are starting to evolve into the provider organization space, including hospitals and federally qualified health centers. So our theme now is really health data quality, ensuring that we have the right information with the right patient at the right time. Our tagline, one patient, one record, kind of ties into that overall vision for the company.
Now, what do you need to do to get to that part where you have the right information and the right data at the right time for those patients?
Yeah, good question. You know, I mean, there's been such a challenge, moving towards a national patient ID. And unfortunately, even, at the legislation level, there's still concern that if you create a national identifier, it can actually, increase patient privacy risks. And we don't believe that. We believe that identifier is critical because as many organizations now are going online to move data, kind of in that real-time environment from one system to another, or even providing access via patient health records online for patients. The challenge is you've got siloed systems out there and you got data residing in many different locations. And to ensure accuracy, of each patient's record in that real-time need becomes kind of challenging because every medical record number is unique to the EMR. Where the data is stored. So me as a patient, I might have two or three different doctors and I might have records in different systems. For me to actually have to log into different systems to access it becomes problematic. And then if I want to aggregate it and move it into a unified record, it even becomes more challenging because then now I have to rely on each system, each provider that is housing that data in their own electronic health records to exchange that information. And then as you're working to move data electronically, whether you're doing it through a health information exchange, you're still at risk because somebody still has to bring in the data, review the data, make sure it's your data to your identity. And that's where we start to see risks, right? That patient safety risk gets compromised because it's hard to do that when there's so many different record systems and different record IDs out there.
So I know a number of organizations have been petitioning Congress to move towards that national patient ID. Do you have optimism that there might be a support in Congress for a patient ID, or do you think that's going to take a little while?
I have optimism, but I think it's going to take a while. I think there's too much concern still around the trust and privacy associated with the data. And there's concern that should the government really be part of that or not? Should that, you know, remain private in the private sector? So I think we're making progress. I know the Patient ID Coalition, AHIMA and HIMSS, working hard, you know, to change that direction, that mindset. But to get that approved and, you know, to get something that would be today in place, I think we're still, I'm optimistic, but I still think it's years away. So our best bet now is how to collaborate with each other, have better interoperability standards. I'd love to see us create standards of data quality, even at a national level. There is movement, improvement around how information gets collected in the EMRs to make sure that we're consistent about each field and each attribute that's being entered. That'll help. A lot of it starts at the practice and the registration side of healthcare on the intake side. So if we can continue to focus there, I think we'll see improvement. But ultimately, you know, if we can get to a single patient identifier, I think interoperability, movement of data, accuracy of information will definitely become much more reliable for the country.
And you seem to be a little more optimistic that there might be some movement towards kind of some really nationwide data standards.
I think so. You know, if you're monitoring, you know, ONC and some of the initiatives that are coming from, you know, their efforts, standardizing now even the mailing address, which is a big movement, you know, just to look at using, you know, things like the USPS format to standardize each address on each record or each individual, that's definitely a positive movement. That alone, you can definitely have a better match rate when you're doing patient matching. I think if we can capture consistently how we capture the date of birth, the first name, last name, and standardize that across all the different systems, that'll help provide some gain as well. So yeah, I definitely am feeling encouraged that at the national level, and you've got some great organizations out there, as I mentioned before, with AHIMA and HIMSS and others, even now Civitas, you know, that really supports the HIE community, taking a much stronger stance on improving standards, you know, for inputting information and really focusing on the data quality aspect. I mean, look at, we're moving into important times with health equity and social determinants of health. We learned from COVID, you know, a lot of bad data was exchanged. Labs had a hard time managing orders in, results out timely. Matter of fact, some results didn't get out because they didn't have the best information on the individuals. So we're learning. I think we need to learn faster. I think people deserve to have better access to their healthcare information as a consumer. Doctors, it's challenging still for them if they need to get information from one doctor on a patient to another. Today, believe it or not, it's still shared by fax, you know, sometimes printed to paper. To me, that's not secure. I mean, I think that puts patient care even more at risk when that information gets printed to hard copy. So I just think there's a good movement. I think we're starting to see more focus around data quality, the use of data. Everyone knows how important the data is, whether it's for precision health or, like I mentioned before, health equity, social determinants of health. But for data to be used, it's definitely got to be much more reliable, and it's got to be matched carefully to each of the patient records.
How difficult is it to match patient records? Because, and even in terms of names, because I actually have an unusual first name. I go by Ron, but my legal name is Ronnie. So, and I've seen sometimes records might, like if I just put my name Ron, the record will go in as Ronald Southwick, which mm-hmm. is actually not my name. So how difficult is it when you have different names maybe listed incorrectly, or people's nicknames or have an usual name? How difficult is that going to be as you move to try and get that national ID, just even getting names straight?
Yeah, good question. And I'm the same way. I'm Greg with two G's at the end. So you can imagine sometimes it gets to be spelled Greg with one G, or Gregory, which is my legal name. So again, one of the challenges, I think, again, if we're looking at standardizing how data gets collected, we need to be careful that every person that gets registered in a healthcare information system, there is at least four minimum attributes so we can match on not only first name, last name, date of birth, but you need a reliable phone number, mailing address, or even email address, because so many of us have email addresses that we've kept for years. So there is a naming convention, a short name, or an interpretation of a name, it gets spelled wrong. That's fine when it happens, but if you've got three really strong attributes to go along with that first name, you have a higher probability of getting a better match on Ron, whether it's Ronnie or Ronald. And many of the systems, and this is probably something that vendors need to really think about when you're doing MPI or patient matching from a person perspective, is making sure that you can store multiple attributes in a single field. So what I mean by that, if your nickname is Ronnie, or in your case, it's your official name, Ron may be your short name and Ronald might be an official name. You need to be able to, from a patient matching perspective, to have all three of those options stored in the first name field. So then when you're doing scoring and matching on first name, you know, if Ron is in one EMR, Ronnie is in a second, and Ronald might be in a third, and your data is coming through in an aggregated sense, then each version of your name is going to be collected and each one's going to be matched as part of your identity. And it just strengthens the overall match rate. So I think that's an opportunity as we're talking about MPI and vendor solutions that are out there doing patient matching, is making sure that we're not limited just to one entry and each attribute, being able to store those multiple values. That'll definitely help improve the match rate.
Well, we've talked about some of the hurdles have to be overcome, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that, but I wanted to talk about, I guess, maybe some of the potential with advances in machine learning really helping drive the future of patient matching. So I was wondering if you could talk more about that, like, you know, how machine learning and AI can help solve some of these problems.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I mean, as we know, around, you know, patient identification, you know, obviously the big focus is about saving lives, but I think now unlocking the potential for technology and revolutionizing, you know, the way we do things, you know, everyone's looking at improving accuracy, improving the match rate, reducing costs. AI machine learning is actually pretty cool, because as the algorithms for patient matching improve, and as I mentioned before, when you can store multiple values on a single attribute, scoring is great, and you can use heuristic and the different, you know, algorithms for matching. But as you get into matching data through referential matching, and that's a cool service that you can apply with any MPI, you can say, all right, I've got pretty high confidence this is Ron. And I know I've got his last name and I've got pretty much good information, but MPI is telling me I'm not 100% able to match that with confidence, because maybe there's a mismatch or single digit mismatch on your date of birth. We can send that out for what we call referential matching and have these very sophisticated data sets validate that it's truly Ron, not only confirm that it's Ron, but we can also look for missing information. We can actually say, what else is missing on Ron that we might want to bring forward and bring back into the record? Well, as you're doing that, and as the system's, you know, managing the merge of you into a single golden record, what happens with machine learning and AI, the machine is watching as we make a stronger prediction through the scoring and through referential matching. And even with data stewards, if you have a data stewardship team looking at these, what I call kind of edge records, where they're not quite a match, and you don't want to create an overlay where you're mixing, you know, patient information into a single record. As the humans and as referential matching and as MPI technology working, machine learning predictions following that saying, I see what's happening. I agree that this is actually wrong. And I'm going to go ahead and agree that we would merge that record. And we start to look to see if human and machine are agreeing. And as the predictions improve and as the machine learning improves, that just means there's a faster, higher probability of a match being done with less intervention having to be done by a human. Not replacing entirely, right? Because you still will have those cases you don't want. Just assume that this is not an overlay because you've got a unique situation occurring between two records. But I love the fact that now with AI and machine learning prediction, patient matching is definitely improving. It's getting faster, and it's obviously going to help control the cost. But we want to keep costs as kind of the secondary consideration because you never want to compromise patient safety. So that part, I think, will only get better as these algorithms improve, as predictions improve. I think patient matching then can really be real time. So as data is going across, you know, the networks, you know, out there, health information exchanges are doing a great job helping to facilitate the movement of data. And as more technology is applied, not only is it going to be faster to move the data, but it's going to be much more reliable with a lot less human, you know, footprint in there to manage that process.
Is the machine learning capable enough now to do a viable national patient ID system?
I wouldn't think so yet. I mean, because it's still fairly new in, you know, application. But I think as it evolves and as more transactions are going through these exchange networks and as more machine learning is applied, I think there's a probable opportunity that it could be part of the solution. Does it become the only solution? Not sure. I mean, I'd love to predict that, but I'm not sure that, you know, at this point I could, because it's just so early with some of these new technologies being applied to patient matching.
So we've been talking about interoperability as well. And it seems like something, when I talk to experts in the field, they mentioned, yeah, we've been talking about interoperability for years and years, but it kind of feels like now that there's actually, like, you know, there's actually some light at the end of the tunnel. I'd be interested in your take. Do you see progress towards real freely sharing of information between systems and payers and other organizations? Do you see it happening fairly soon, or do you still think we're a little further down the road than we might want to be?
I do, actually. I think with, you know, some of the recent legislation and the removal of information blocking and the, you know, the need for, you know, providing, you know, better care, you know, at you know, kind of at the point of care, and but doing it more real time, I think interoperability is definitely becoming much more of a focus. I think now hospitals are starting to see that they can't hold their data hostage in their own silos. The payer-to-payer exchange movement that's coming, and, you know, the requirements for health plans to share data, you know, on its members with other health plans. I think all that becomes just a tremendous opportunity for the country. And I think we're starting to see a lot more collaboration, not only between the health systems and the payers, but we're starting to see more vendor collaboration. And I think the only way you achieve interoperability, and I hate to compare it to another industry, but I'll use the fin service, you know, industry with, you know, banks realize that you're creating limitations, you know, for your consumers if you need to get money out of an ATM. And if you're only connected to your bank's ATM and you're traveling across the globe or even to another state or a city, that became problematic. So the banks figured out that to be able to do this, keep consumers happy, keep real-time movement of data, you know, from a financial perspective, to now consumers, we never think twice if we need to go pull money out. If you're traveling to California, you live on the East Coast, you get your money out. You don't even think about what's happening behind the scenes. And that transaction is real time. I really think that we'll start to see that apply, that same logic and that same movement in healthcare, and it's happening. You've got more health data exchanges that are now collaborating and moving data outside of their networks. Hospitals are starting to collaborate. There's a movement now, obviously, to centralize how a health record is created so you can access it via the web. I feel more encouraged now that we'll see more real-time interoperability happen in this country.
I'm wondering, you mentioned consumers a couple of times. I'm curious to get your thoughts on how much consumers are going to be driving this, because I've been talking, more and more people say, you know, healthcare hasn't been as consumer friendly as a lot of other industries, and that really needs to change. Do you think consumers are going to demand more of these changes, or force healthcare systems to make more progress in these areas?
I do. That's a great question, Ron. I think consumers are getting smarter. They want better access to their healthcare, their information. COVID's driving a lot of that. A lot of us went virtual. You know, telehealth is playing a huge role right now in healthcare, and you're not able to necessarily go see, you know, a doctor like we used to, and you want to know that information. You want to be engaged in your healthcare journey, whether you're a healthy patient or you have, you know, a chronic condition. Consumers want information. They want access to it. And there's much more of a drive for that now. And the younger generation, I don't want to classify myself as being older, but younger generation, they're much more inclined, you know, to be connected to their devices and having access to their information. And I think that's going to drive a lot of the behavior. And I think more of the digital transformation is going to be driven because of the younger generation. And I think as we do more with telehealth, as we do more with, you know, being in a remote situation, as many organizations have shifted, that's the way you deliver information to people. And I think that's going to help drive this adoption that we need.
We've talked about what you'd like to see from Congress in terms of legislation for a national patient ID. What other support would you like to see coming from Washington?
More focus on, you know, this whole health equity conversation is interesting. There's a lot of, you know, issues around behavioral care, and, you know, gosh, so many things happened where we were isolated during COVID and we became so remote. I really hope that we look at the healthcare system to ensure that every person, you know, that is here in our country has access to healthcare and reliably and equally. And I see more of that focus coming. I see more of a movement. But we still have, you know, a huge transient homeless situation going on in America. Not everyone has the ability, you know, to have a primary care doctor and have great insurance. A lot of people don't get treated. They don't get treated timely. They end up with a secondary condition based on, you know, a situation where they're not able to get healthcare. So I really hope there's more movement for that. You know, and I think that helps fuel how we become better at treating patients, having better therapies. Precision health, I think, is going to be an interesting movement to follow here over the next few years, really looking at what therapies become available for people, how well people respond. I think laboratories play a critical role in that from a testing perspective. I think there'll be more data used to monitor patient conditions and provide better outcomes. So I hope the government sees that as value for its people in this country, because I think that'll help build a better healthcare system. And obviously, you know, look for ways to drive, you know, healthcare costs down and make it affordable for people. So that's where I hope government, you know, steps in and sees that as a critical role that they can help play across the industry.
Do you think moving towards a better interoperability and even getting towards a patient ID, do you think these are steps that will help improve health equity?
I do. It's just because, you know, clinical, you know, data management is so critical across systems. You know, it's not only for interoperability and health data exchanging, but the success of healthcare transformation is the ability to make sure that you have full patient-centric visibility and care, making sure that the provider, the care team, those that are involved in healthcare from a pop health perspective have access to that information. If you give everyone access at the right level, keeping it patient-centric, ensuring that the individual level, record information is not compromised, and you give people access to it, you will have better outcomes in quality. You'll have better outcomes for patient safety, and you'll make better decisions. And then people will actually be healthier. That's ultimately what you're achieving, right? So if you do this right and you get to real-time interoperability, you know, you improve, you know, what can be years, you know, months down to days, seconds. You can actually be willing to do more and do it more reliably, not putting patients at risk, always putting the patient at the focus, but getting it more closer to that real-time need. So you're not waiting, you know, for a claim to get processed from an administrative data perspective and realize, gosh, you know, that patient really wasn't being monitored close enough with its condition. Why aren't we looking at the clinical data sets with the administrative data sets combined and giving people more access to that? You'll have better patient health management if you do that. I really believe that.
So maybe as a final question, I'd be curious just to get your thoughts on what healthcare leaders should be looking at or thinking about as they look for more technology solutions to solve some of these issues.
I love the whole AI avenue. I think we're seeing it, you know, applied in other industries. It has become very reliable. I think we have to look for more, you know, automation, less manual intervention. We still rely heavily, you know, I talked about it earlier in this, you know, on this call was, you know, how fax machines are still prevalent in healthcare. I think we have to move away from the legacy technology. We have to rely on modern technology. I think we got to be less afraid of the internet. I know internet is a scary thing and there's bad things that happen with information, but if we focus on, you know, standardizing, you know, how we privatize, you know, how we ensure that we have, you know, good practices for protecting data, I think if we can move past that, we can do more with data, we can do more with healthcare, and really leveraging some of the great technologies out there to do that. I mean, fire resources, you know, some of the new interoperability standards, you know, make it more reliable, less cumbersome, even for health systems, you know, to make connections to each other. We just have to leverage technology the right way and just keep in mind, you know, in the back of our minds, that we never want to put patients at risk from a compromise or compromising both patient and their data. If we do that, there's some great technologies already available today. There's great standards that we can start applying. We just have to agree on these standards. And if everyone works collaboratively, we can create a better, you know, interoperability platform for healthcare. But it's gonna take some work. I mean, this is stuff that we've watched, you know, for the last couple of decades with some slow movement. Again, I hate to use COVID, you know, as, you know, kind of the focus here, but COVID really helped organizations look at the problems that have been going on for a long time. And we've seen faster movement, just how we're collecting data. We've improved, you know, the accuracy of putting more focus on complete information being collected. It's helping us. You know, I'm not saying pandemics are what we need to have, you know, to make change, but in this case, it did force, you know, both vendor providers, labs, everyone to kind of stop, rethink workflow, rethink technologies. Let's apply more technology, and I think we'll have better outcomes. I think there's a huge opportunity for this country if we all focus and work on it together.
Okay, that sounds like a good place to wrap it up. So we've been talking with Greg Church of ForMedica. So I just wanted to thank you very much for this the conversation. I think it was a really interesting conversation, and It'll be very interesting to see what happens in the months and years to come. But I think there's going to be a very different healthcare system in the not too distant future.
I agree, Ron. And I really thank you for the opportunity and for your close attention, you know, on the topic. So appreciate you reaching out.
Okay. Thanks very much. Thank you for joining Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MGH Life Sciences. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. For the latest news, analysis, and insights on healthcare, visit our website, chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on social media on LinkedIn and Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Thanks again for joining us. Take care.